Welcome to Music Journeys. I'm Mike Foley. On this edition, the inspirational story of Australian singer-songwriter Mia Dyson. A near-death experience informs her album Tender Heart, and here on Music Journeys, Mia tells us all about it, how the songs came together before and after that life-changing moment, the mental side of recovery, how music helped, and advice for all of us to maintain a sense of gratitude. She also takes part in our listener favorite Fast Five segment, the handful of song questions that lend even more insight into what inspires musicians. Mia Dyson, our featured guest on this edition of Music Journeys. Thanks for listening.
Hey, this is Mia Dyson, and this is my music journey.
Oh my, that golden light pouring right through you. Cross the space between our faces where the world comes through. I tried and I failed to hold on to that light when you left me at the gate and walked out into the night. You pour gold into my heart.
Golden Light from Mia Dyson's Tender Heart album reflects her experience in the space between life and death.
An undiagnosed heart arrhythmia stopped my heart, and my husband, who co-wrote all of these songs with me and has been my writing partner for the last couple of records, he resuscitated me. I went to the hospital, you know, during COVID and had to have this defibrillator implanted in my chest. It was in the middle of writing this record, so I'd written some stuff. Well, we'd written some stuff, including a song that seems to be somewhat of a premonition of this experience. It's the song Dare, which is the first track.
The ground beneath my feet will always be shaking. The blood under my skin will always be racing. The center of my body will always be aching. Death inside of me will always be waiting. Dare, turn and face me where I'll be waiting.
This near-death experience was precipitated by, of all things, an earthquake. In LA, the syndrome, long QT syndrome that I have, can be triggered by loud noises. So this earthquake set this off. It's very like mystical. Anyway, this song speaks about sort of facing death and having the earth shake and death awaiting me. And it was written before this happened. So I've definitely had songs, you know, appear that way before. Like some, I feel like songs don't necessarily reveal themselves till much later, like what they're about and why they were written. So I grew up in a pretty musical family. My dad was a guitar maker. He retired recently, but when I was little, he was experimenting, building guitars, and there was always instruments in the house, you know, a little keyboard for us. And my dad made my sister a little baby guitar when she was like five. And my mum and dad both loved music and had a pretty extensive record collection. I was just surrounded by music and took it for granted, like didn't really have any particular interest in playing music. But as a teenager, my friend got my dad to make her a guitar. And I was predictably, I think, looking back, jealous. My friend can't have a guitar and I don't have a guitar. So I got my dad to make me a guitar for my 14th birthday. an electric guitar. He makes all electric instruments, and I fell in love with it. The fact that I could figure out how to play songs that I heard that I loved, you know, sit there with my CD player and play pause till I could figure out what they were doing, was the most exciting thing ever. And then the only thing to like top that was realizing that one could write their own music. One could create something out of nothing. So I started writing around 16 and fell in love with, yeah, playing guitar and singing and then writing in succession. I don't know that there was ever a decision. It was strange. Like some people are like, I knew I wanted to be a writer from when I was five or whatever. Like I loved playing music, but it was mysterious to me. How do you make a career out of it? And I didn't, you know, I just tumbled into it and had weirdly some early encouragement that kept me going and, you know, came into the era of DIY where you could put records out yourself, press your own CD and cart them around to the festivals. And my, you know, my whole basis of my career was playing live. I had two residencies a week in Melbourne, which is quite a big music city. You know, it's very vibrant. You know, audiences love going to see live music there. So on a Thursday night and a Sunday afternoon, I was playing, you know, getting my chops up. And, you know, I don't think I had much of a plan, but, you know, eventually I built an audience through playing live in Melbourne, and I slowly sort of built a career there in Australia without really knowing what I was doing. Especially my early records are very, I'm trying to prove myself and I'm singing as loud and as hard as I can and I'm in your face. And this experience, a near-death experience, and I think just growing older and maturing has kind of shifted my approach. And especially with my voice, I think I'm on this record. It feels more like my natural state rather than something that I'm forcing. You know, for a long time, it was difficult to get back into music. I, for the first 6 months or so, I'd say, like, I had to just set it down. I'm not one of those people who can write in a sort of very low state. I really had to do a lot of healing before I could come back. But I think the healing part of music is that I could come back to this creative outlet and get the catharsis from writing, but only once I was well enough to have the sort of like a base level of strength to do it.
I want to follow up on the mental side of recovery. You know, before you could even get to the music, what were some of the things you had to overcome and how did you do that?
Yeah, I had to, you know, I had panic attacks for the first time in my life. I mean, I'd always had a little bit of anxiety and depression here and there, but I got full-blown panic attacks about 6 months after the experience. I had to, first of all, just do some quite acute panic management, like some breathing techniques, learn some really specific techniques for getting my mind off that sort of spinning thing, which, you know, is very hard to describe. It's like, I guess it feels like a sense of imminent death, a threat of that, but physically it's like a broiling like fire coming in the stomach and in the chest, kind of coming up, and the threat of it like reaching the head and kind of exploding at the top. And then not long after, I really got into a pretty deep meditation practice that, you know, totally grounded me. I mean, it took a long time, but because, you know, I developed like a fear of flying, which I, you know, I need to fly for my career, and I go back and forth to Australia, and it was very scary to sort of contemplate not being able to fly. But this meditation practice really grounded me back to earth, and I was able to like have those symptoms, but just let them move through me. It's a very paradoxical thing of like somehow the resistance keeps them alive, you know, the fear and everything. And whereas being able to like let an experience move through me shows me that I'm okay, but I need to go through it. I can't go around it. But then post the experience, I just really dove into thinking and reading and listening to people talk about death and, you know, coming to terms with its immediacy. And so all of that permeates the record. I mean, most obviously in a song like Thank You, which is me just singing the things I would want to say to a loved one if I knew they were dying or if I knew I was dying. The very simple things that need to be said.
Into that light, or I might have to leave you if it's my time and one of us stays in the world a while. Either way, I will say.
You mentioned the simplicity, Mia, but so powerful. I mean, what you chose with those four messages, I don't know that we need anything else.
I totally agree. And it's beautiful that there's not really much to say, you know? I mean, obviously, thank you and I love you are so obvious, but forgive me and I forgive you, to me, are like the powerful, like, I know that hits me very hard. There's so much that, particularly with the people we love, that we do wrong and we mess up, and both to acknowledge that, hey, I wasn't perfect and I know I hurt you, and that's true for you too. It's true for all of us. It feels like compassion that extends to everyone rather than just like if it was just forgive me or if it was just I forgive you.
Come over as you are. Come over. Honey, it's so easy to please me if you please your heart. Come now to me, barren, or with your basket full. We'll hold each other's heads when we can't raise them anymore. Come to me in splinters, we'll build ourselves a tree to shade us both in summer and drink sunlight through our leaves. Come over as you are. Come over as you are. Come over as you are. Honey, it's so easy to please me if you please your heart.
Come to Me is one. I feel like it's the rare song that, you know, we tried to record that song for my previous record in a very different iteration. Same lyrics, but totally different melody and chords, which is kind of was an unusual experience for me, because usually I'm not one of those people that has like 25 songs and then whittles it down to 10. The 10 that I bring into the studio, I feel very strongly about, and they're the ones that end up on the record. But in this case, it just didn't quite land. And so, but I just loved the lyrics to that song. It was a real coming together of my and my husband's writing, where he's very poetic orientated. I'm a bit more literal. And the rebonding that we did from going through this experience together, because it was very powerful to sort of, for him to think I was dying and for me to come back and for me to experience him saving my life. You know, it was very powerful. And that this song, even though it was written before, just feels like, you know, all of those prayers and meditations about love that come together in a song. And musically, it's this sort of gentle, gorgeous, like bath of sound. So that's one. And then let's see. Sunny Hills probably is another favorite of mine. It's kind of got this spaghetti western, very subtly, country, California country, rock and roll thing about it. And the melody that the chorus has, one of the band like misheard that melody and started playing it differently. And so that ends up being the instrumental sections. And I just love those kinds of sort of accidents that create something beautiful. And yeah, and it feels very triumphant. I mean, you know, like so many of my songs, it's also a love song.
How special is it to have your husband as a collaborator? I mean, you go through the experience, but then he's part of the artistic process too. And then what is it you both have learned from this experience that might help the rest of us? Because even somebody hearing this story right now, they think about it, but then life gets in the way and you kind of forget to appreciate everything around you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first off, it's incredibly special to have been able to, I mean, when we first discovered that we could write together, it was the most magical thing, because I'd tried writing with lots of people and I never finished a song with anyone else that I tried writing with. And then we discovered, because Carl, my husband, has always written poetry, so he's got this facility with words. And for me, I've got obviously the musical facility. And so together, it was like just an absolute discovery of, and it was sort of 8 years into our relationship. So it was this amazing late discovery. And for me, I don't know that I could recommend this to everyone, but to answer the second part of your question, like writing together, like doing something creative together, I think is an incredibly growing experience. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that it was easy. I mean, anything that was going on in our relationship would come out in trying to write. And so sometimes we had to resolve that through the writing, you know, and sometimes that came through into the writing. But I would, you know, to that second question, I would say just trying to remember to give each other, you know, the benefit of the doubt, and, you know, to know that we're just all fallible. And it's so tricky. Like the experience that I had soon after the near-death experience, of total gratitude and total sense of wonder and luck at having another chance to live, you know, that felt like it would never go away. And it slowly dissipated. Like it doesn't just stay. I don't get to stay in that state forever. So I do have to bring it back through, you know, practices that bring me into the present, like meditation and writing music and playing music. So yeah, that's as good as I've got, I think.
I don't know, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. One more song I wanted to ask you about. It's a short one, but These Words. What can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of on the topic. You know, we try and work things out through language, and the idea that we can explain ourselves and be understood through language. You know, I think even those of us who were the most intimate with each other, like, words can be misinterpreted. Words are not infallible. They don't, you know, they leave someone's mouth and they sound different when they reach someone's ear. And it's all about how can we meet in the place beyond language and truly be together.
These words are fooling us, me with the writing, you with the reading. Let us do away with them and look into each other more easily. Seems like you're over there and I'm over here, but surely we are together. We can discover this over and over, we forget and remember. Where do we travel to? In between our words, is that the place where we are the most together? Where between our thoughts, where will we be most likely to find each other? To find each other.
Ooh. It's painful sometimes when words just, you know, completely fail. And this is why music exists. Life a lot of the time doesn't make any sense, you know, and like trying to figure it out intellectually and analytically just about always falls short, as entertaining as it sometimes can be. But music is this place where one can be free and one can be, you know, at peace and in the present moment and connecting with people. I mean, because there's listening to music and then there's playing it. And for me, getting to play it with other human beings is like my favorite thing in the world. Being on stage or just sitting around a living room or a fire and singing with other people is just the most exquisite joy. It's like there's nothing that compares to that. And it's that connection through music rather than the spoken word. You can bond with a person and you don't have to even know them to truly experience aliveness. Often we need to be, you know, beyond words and dancing and singing and feeling a beat and all of those good things.
Mia Dyson will help us experience a little more of those good things with her selections in the Fast Five. Here we go. What's the first song you can remember hearing that you loved?
Tom Petty's Free Falling. My grandmother gave me the LP and just being like blown away, you know, this guitar guy with the guitar, his voice too, just like, yeah, such a weird voice, really. I think he's, you know, so famous and it's become normal, but I think he's got a really strange voice and it's really cool.
How about the song that makes you feel the most nostalgic, kind of sparks memories for you?
The song Hold On, probably by Tom Waits.
By 99 cent store, she closed her eyes and started swaying. But it's so hard to dance that way when it's cold and there's no music. Oh, your old hometown's so far away, but inside your head there's a record that's playing, a song called Hold On, Hold On. Baby, gotta hold on to take a mind.
He sings about all these places I've never been, and you know, and when I heard the song first, I hadn't even been to the States, so it's just, but somehow it's so imbued with nostalgia, like it just feels like this looking back at a life and wondering what went wrong and what worked, and it just kind of cuts into that part of my heart.
Absolutely. We're going to pick it up here. Your go-to song for dancing, or a tune that you hear and you just can't sit still when you hear it?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm going to be really, you know, embarrassing and just say, like, Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody. That song's just, come on, who can listen to that and not dance?
Definitely. How about the song that makes you feel like working out or motivates you to do something that maybe you don't feel like doing at the time?
Ooh, I would say the entire War on Drugs, Lost in a Dream record. Starting where that first song is something like insistently like, let's get going, let's start something.
And last one, the song that lifts you up when you're feeling down.
I listen to sad songs when I'm feeling sad and it makes me feel good. So like maybe Alexandra's Leaving by Leonard Cohen.
As someone long prepared for this to happen, go firmly to the window, drink it in. Exquisite music, Alexandra laughing. Your first commitment's tangible again. And you who had the honor of her evening, by that honor, had your own restored. Say goodbye to Alexandra leaving.
I mean, this is just like what's coming to mind right now. I'm sure there's a million, but that one gets me.
Mia, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your experience, enriching our lives with your music, and I hope you can bring the tour to the U.S. and the Central Ohio area sometime soon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. It's been really fun. Love your questions, and I'd love to come visit. I've been one time to Columbus, but it was a long time ago, so hoping for it again.
I'm Mike Foley. Talk to you again on the next Music Journey.
I'm Cinema Classics' John DeSando. Each week, a guest and I connect the present with the past by discussing a classic film or a new film and its connection to classics. Because classic films are usually universally relevant, we blissfully discuss the commonalities between older films and newer ones. More about classic films on our Double Take podcast, Cinema Classics Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. Double Take, at the podcast experience exclusively on WCBE.